What if the thing you think you need is the very thing that breaks you down into pieces? Toxic relationships become emotional prisons, not by locking doors, but by rewiring our brains. Across time and cultures, people fall again and again into cycles of blame, control, and return. Our journey explores why individuals gravitate toward partners who tear them down, why they stay even when misery unfolds, and what forces from childhood, biology, and society reinforce these harmful bonds. From trauma bonding and intermittent reinforcement to attachment wounds and subconscious familiarity, this story exposes the hidden architecture of toxic relationships. In each chapter, we navigate the emotional labyrinth, revealing truths that feel both shocking and heartbreakingly familiar. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next chapter might just change the way you see love and survival. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Blueprint from Childhood. Before we ever fall in love, we fall into patterns. These patterns are etched in us long before we know how to spell the word relationship. The way we are held, soothed, ignored, praised, punished, or forgotten, all of it becomes a silent script. And in that script, some of us are cast in roles we never auditioned for. Roles like the chaser, the pleaser, the fixer, the abandoned. Attachment theory, first introduced by British psychologist John Bowlby, laid the foundation for understanding these roles. Bowlby believed that our early relationships with caregivers shape our expectations for intimacy, trust, and safety in adult relationships. If those early bonds were secure, consistent, nurturing, and emotionally available, we often grow up expecting the same from partners. But when those early bonds were inconsistent, avoidant, or emotionally chaotic, something different happens. Our brain begins to associate love with anxiety, uncertainty, or even pain. This is where the blueprint begins. Take a child whose parent is loving one moment and cold the next. They don't know what version of love will show up on any given day, so they learn to scan for cues, walk on eggshells, and overextend themselves just to get closeness. That child becomes an adult who chases affection, tolerates mixed signals, and confuses chaos with passion. These are the people who end up saying things like, "I know it's not good for me, but I can't leave," or, "It hurts, but at least it feels real." What they're often describing is an anxious attachment style, a deep fear of abandonment that fuels a drive to cling tightly, even when the connection is toxic. The emotional highs of attention and affection feel euphoric. The lows of rejection and withdrawal feel like death. On the other end of the spectrum, someone raised with emotionally distant or unavailable caregivers may develop an avoidant attachment style. These individuals value independence to a fault. They keep people at arm's length, avoid vulnerability, and shut down when intimacy becomes too real. But here's the twist. Anxious and avoidant types often attract each other. One craves closeness, the other fears it. One pursues, the other withdraws. Together, they recreate the very wounds they've never healed, a dynamic that feels painfully familiar. This is not just theory. It's a reality played out in millions of relationships. In one 2021 survey, 45% of respondents said they had stayed in a relationship that made them feel anxious, insecure, or unloved. And when asked why, the top responses were, "It felt normal, and I thought love was supposed to feel that way." These answers are not logical. They're emotional, and they speak to how powerful early programming is. When love is first associated with unpredictability or emotional hunger, that becomes the standard. Even in adulthood, even with knowledge, even with therapy, many of us are still trying to win love from someone who reminds us of the person who first withheld it. We also must talk about emotional neglect, the quiet killer of self-worth. It's not always abuse that shapes us, but absence. Children who grow up emotionally ignored often internalize the message, "My feelings don't matter," or worse, "I don't matter." Later in life, these same individuals may find themselves drawn to partners who mirror that neglect. They're not chasing love, they're chasing validation. Then there's modeling. We imitate what we see. If a child grows up in a household where love is expressed through yelling, jealousy, silent treatments, or dramatic makeups and breakups, they may associate that emotional chaos with intimacy. Calm might feel boring. Safety might feel suspicious. This is why so many people fall for toxic partners without realizing it's toxic until they're already deep in. The relationship feels intense, passionate, all-consuming, because it's tapping into wounds that never healed. The partner may be critical like a father, or emotionally unavailable like a mother, or manipulative like a caregiver who once held power. It's not that people are choosing pain on purpose. They're choosing what's familiar. And the brain loves familiar. Psychologists call this repetition compulsion, a phenomenon where individuals unconsciously recreate painful past experiences in an attempt to gain mastery or closure. But closure rarely comes. Instead, they end up reliving the same pain with different faces, hoping this time it ends differently. It rarely does. And here's the harsh truth. Many toxic relationships don't start toxic. They start intense, magnetic, addictive. The attention may feel overwhelming. The chemistry may be blinding. But if you dig deeper, often you'll find a desperate search for love underneath. A child inside the adult still trying to feel chosen. Healing starts when we name the pattern, when we stop romanticizing pain, when we understand that what feels like love might actually be anxiety, emotional survival, or an unhealed wound from long ago. This isn't about blaming our parents or guardians. It's about breaking a cycle. Because until we recognize the emotional blueprint we're operating from, we will continue to build relationships on shaky ground. We will mistake intensity for intimacy, chaos for chemistry, and emotional unavailability for mystery. The goal is not just to find love, but to be able to receive it, truly, safely, without fear. But first, we have to confront the parts of us still chasing ghosts. Because no matter how well someone loves us, it won't matter if we don't believe we deserve it. In Chapter 2, we'll explore how those early wounds evolve into toxic relationship patterns, and why, for some, pain becomes the most powerful form of connection. Chapter 2, The Cycle of Abuse and Trauma Bonding. Most toxic relationships don't start with pain. They start with passion. That passion can feel overwhelming, like fireworks, fate, or destiny. The person seems to know you, see you, make you feel alive. But slowly something shifts. The compliments fade. The mood swings start. Then come the insults, the distance, the unpredictability. Before long, you find yourself in a cycle. You hurt, you forgive, you hurt again. You cry, you apologize, even when it's not your fault. And somehow, you feel more addicted than ever. This is not just emotional confusion. This is trauma bonding. To understand how people get trapped in toxic relationships, we must understand the cycle of abuse, a repeating emotional pattern that is well documented in psychology. It has four stages. Tension building. You feel something is wrong. Maybe your partner is more irritable. Maybe they go quiet. You walk on eggshells. You start adjusting your behavior to avoid conflict. You shrink. Incident. This is the explosion, yelling, manipulation, threats, emotional cruelty. Sometimes it's physical, but often it's psychological. You may be blamed for everything, made to feel worthless, or gaslit into doubting your own memory. Reconciliation, the apology, the charm, the sweet version of them returns. They might cry, promise to change, or say they can't live without you. You feel relief, hope, even love. You stay calm. Things feel okay. You pretend the last incident never happened. You try harder. You want to believe. But tension begins to build again, and the cycle restarts. This loop becomes a psychological trap, and at the heart of that trap is trauma bonding. Trauma bonding is not just a bad habit. It's a chemical attachment built through repeated cycles of abuse and reward. When your brain receives occasional kindness or affection after pain, it becomes addicted to the hope of relief. You start craving the good moments, no matter how rare they are. You cling to the apologies, the brief highs, the moments of connection, and you ignore the rest. This is the same mechanism that drives gambling addiction. It's called intermittent reinforcement. When rewards are unpredictable, they become more powerful. The uncertainty creates obsession. In a toxic relationship, one kind word after a week of silence can feel euphoric. One hug after a cruel insult feels like salvation. The brain responds by flooding you with dopamine, the same chemical released when you win at a slot machine or use a drug. Over time, your brain learns to associate the abuser with both the pain and the relief. This creates a deep, confusing attachment that feels impossible to escape. And it's not just dopamine. Cortisol, the stress hormone, rises during abuse. When you finally receive love again, oxytocin, the bonding hormone, kicks in, creating a feeling of closeness. The brain gets hooked on the roller coaster. it confuses intensity with love. Many survivors say, "I know it's unhealthy, but I can't let go." That's because their nervous system is now wired to survive the relationship, not thrive in it. The chaos becomes their normal. Even worse, abusers often use gaslighting to keep you trapped. They deny your reality, twist your words, or make you feel like you're overreacting. You start doubting your memories. You question whether you're the problem. This mental fog, combined with chemical dependency, makes it nearly impossible to walk away without serious support. It's important to understand that trauma bonds are not signs of weakness. They are signs of survival. People stay in abusive relationships because they are trying to fix the unfixable. They believe that if they just love harder, behave better, or stay long enough, the good version of their partner will return for good. But here's the truth. If love is real, it doesn't require suffering to prove it. If connection is healthy, it doesn't break you down to rebuild you. And yet, millions are caught in these cycles. Sometimes for years. Sometimes for decades. Often, they hide the truth from friends and family. They post happy photos. They lie to themselves. The shame is enormous. And the fear of being alone, of starting over, of facing judgment, keeps them quiet. Some even confuse trauma bonding with soulmates. Because the emotional highs feel so intense, they assume the relationship must be special. But what they're actually feeling is survival chemistry. Their body is celebrating the temporary escape from pain, not true love. Healing begins when we name this for what it is. Not romance. Not fate. Not passion. Addiction. Abuse. Bondage. The first step is recognizing the pattern. The second step is understanding that leaving doesn't mean you're weak. It means you're brave enough to choose yourself. And the third step? Rebuilding a nervous system that no longer craves chaos. In Chapter 3, we'll explore how the brain's chemistry reinforces these emotional traps, and why biology sometimes betrays our hearts in the cruelest ways. Chapter 3, Biology's Blind Spot, Where Brain Chemistry Meets Heartache. What if the reason we stay in toxic relationships isn't just emotional, but biological? What if our own brain, designed to help us survive, is the same thing keeping us stuck? Love, at its core, is chemical. And in a toxic relationship, those chemicals work like a dangerous drug, giving us highs that feel like ecstasy and lows that feel like withdrawal. Most people don't realize how powerful that internal mix truly is. But once we understand what's happening beneath the surface, it becomes clear. We aren't just falling for someone. We're falling into a biochemical trap. Let's begin with dopamine, the brain's reward chemical. Every time we receive love, attention, a compliment, or even just a sweet text from someone we care about, dopamine is released. It gives us a rush. It tells us, this feels good. Do it again. But in a toxic relationship, this reward is inconsistent. One day, your partner is warm and loving. The next, they're cold, distant, or cruel. That unpredictability causes the brain to release even more dopamine during the good moments, because they're rare. That's called frustration attraction, when the lack of consistency makes the little scraps of kindness feel more valuable. The more unpredictable the love, the more addictive it becomes. Now, add in oxytocin, the bonding hormone. Oxytocin is released during moments of intimacy. Not just sex, but also cuddling, long conversations, or any shared vulnerability. It tells the brain, you're safe with this person. Stay close. But when that same person later criticizes, ignores, or manipulates you, your body still remembers the oxytocin. It wants the bond. It remembers the comfort. So it clings harder. This creates a dangerous mix. Your brain is rewarding you for returning to the same person who causes your pain. It's not just emotional longing. It's literal chemical dependence. Then comes cortisol, the stress hormone. In healthy doses, cortisol helps us stay alert and protect ourselves. But in toxic relationships, cortisol levels stay elevated. You're constantly in fight or flight mode. Your nervous system doesn't know how to relax. You're hyper-aware of their mood, their tone, their silence. You learn to scan every gesture for clues. You feel wired and exhausted at the same time. Over time, your body begins to normalize chaos. Calm might feel suspicious. Peace might feel boring. And worst of all, kindness might feel unfamiliar. This is how trauma rewires the nervous system. Many people confuse limerence, the obsessive state of infatuation, with true love. Limerence causes intense highs and deep crashes. It's driven by fantasy, not reality. When your partner pulls away, you fantasize harder. You remember the beginning, the good times, the potential. That fantasy becomes your new drug. Even after a breakup, these chemicals don't just vanish. The brain still craves the dopamine. The nervous system still expects chaos. That's why many people relapse. They go back to their toxic exes. Not because things have changed, but because their body misses the chemical cocktail. Withdrawal feels unbearable. It's not just missing a person. It's a biological craving. Researchers have found that the brains of people in toxic love show activity patterns similar to those addicted to substances like cocaine. This isn't just poetic language. It's real. Emotional pain activates the same brain regions as physical pain. So when someone ghosts you, insults you, or pulls away without warning, your brain interprets it as injury. You're not just heartbroken. You're chemically unbalanced. That's why logic doesn't work. You can know someone is bad for you. You can make lists of red flags. You can swear it's over. But your biology wants the next hit. Healing means retraining your brain. It means resetting your nervous system. This can only happen through time, distance, and emotional detox. You must remove the source of the chemical imbalance and create new patterns. Stable friendships, healthy routines, therapy, journaling, meditation. It's not about forgetting them. It's about reclaiming your own internal balance. One of the most important truths to accept is this. Love is not supposed to hurt like this. Love should not feel like a roller coaster you can't get off. If it feels like withdrawal when they leave, it's not love. It's addiction. So the next time you wonder why you can't stop thinking about them, why you can't walk away, why you miss them even after the worst pain, remember, your brain is just following a pattern that can be broken, a cycle that can end. In Chapter 4, we'll shift our focus to self-worth and how low self-esteem makes toxic love feel deserved, even when it's destroying you from the inside. Chapter 4, Low Self-Esteem, The Silent Partner in Toxic Love. If you've ever wondered why someone stays in a relationship that makes them feel small, afraid, or constantly uncertain, the answer often lies beneath the surface, in the way they see themselves. Toxic relationships don't just survive on manipulation or chemistry. They survive because one person believes deep down that this is the best they can get, that this is all they deserve. This is the power of low self-esteem, a quiet, invisible force that shapes our choices without us realizing it. It's not loud like heartbreak. It doesn't scream like betrayal. Instead, it whispers, "You're not enough. You're lucky someone loves you at all. You should just be grateful they stayed." People with low self-worth often enter relationships already feeling broken. And toxic partners know how to spot that weakness. They may start with compliments, charm, or intense attention. But once they feel secure, the put-downs begin. The shift is subtle. A backhanded compliment. A comparison to someone better. A reminder of your flaws. Over time, these small jabs chip away at confidence like slow erosion. You start shrinking. You stop speaking up. You apologize when you're not at fault. And here's where it gets dangerous. The more someone disrespects you, the more your brain says, "See? I was right. I'm not worthy of better." It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Low self-esteem attracts toxic partners, and toxic partners reinforce low self-esteem. This loop is especially strong for people who grew up feeling unloved, ignored, or overly criticized. If a parent constantly told you that you were too much, not enough, or always wrong, that voice becomes internal. As an adult, when a partner treats you the same way, it feels familiar. Not good, not safe, but known. And the known often feels more comfortable than the unknown. One of the most dangerous beliefs a person can carry is, "This is just how love is." They confuse control with care, jealousy with passion, possessiveness with protection. So when their partner gets angry, they blame themselves. When the silence stretches for days, they try harder. When they're disrespected, they rationalize it. "He had a bad day. She didn't mean it like that. I just need to be more patient." But healthy love never makes you feel worthless. In relationships built on mutual respect, mistakes happen, but they are addressed with kindness, not punishment. Needs are discussed, not dismissed. Disagreements don't end with fear or emotional withdrawal. And love never requires you to become smaller to be accepted. So why do people with low self-esteem stay? Because they believe the pain is a price they must pay to be loved. Because they've never experienced anything better. Because part of them believes they're lucky to even have someone. no matter how cruel that someone is. Studies have shown that individuals with low self-esteem are more likely to tolerate disrespect, accept blame, and fear rejection in romantic relationships. They often suppress their needs to keep the peace. They bend, fold, and disappear, just to avoid being alone. But the cost of staying is high. Over time, toxic love doesn't just hurt. It rewrites your identity. You start to believe the lies you've been fed, that you're hard to love, that you're too emotional, too demanding, too much. In reality, you're just asking for the bare minimum: honesty, kindness, emotional presence. But if you've been told for years that your standards are too high, you begin to expect less. And eventually, you forget what real love looks like. So how do you begin to rebuild self-worth? It starts with awareness. You must begin to recognize the voice in your head that puts you down, and understand that it may not even be yours. It might be your mother, your father, a cruel ex, a teacher, a bully. That voice must be challenged, not obeyed. Then comes boundaries, saying no when you're uncomfortable, walking away from disrespect, and learning to value peace over attachment. And finally, healing, which comes not from someone else loving you right, but from you deciding that your heart, your body, and your future are worth protecting. You don't heal by proving your worth to someone who can't see it. You heal by realizing you never had to prove it in the first place. In the next chapter, we'll explore why people are drawn to what hurts them, and how familiar pain can feel safer than unfamiliar peace. Because sometimes it's not love we're chasing. It's the comfort of a wound we've never stopped trying to fix. Chapter 5. Familiar pain. When the known feels safer than the good. There's a moment in every toxic relationship when someone pauses and thinks, why does this feel so familiar? They may not have the words for it, but deep in their body, something recognizes the pattern. The chaos, the blame, the way love comes wrapped in tension. That's because many people don't fall in love with a person. They fall in love with a pattern. More specifically, they fall into what's known as repetition compulsion, a psychological phenomenon where we unconsciously repeat painful situations from the past in an attempt to gain control over them. This happens most often in romantic relationships, and it usually stems from early life wounds that were never healed. Here's how it works. Let's say someone grew up with a father who was emotionally unavailable, distant, and cold. That child never felt fully seen or valued. Fast forward to adulthood. They meet someone who is charming but emotionally inconsistent. At first, it feels exciting, then confusing, then painful. But instead of leaving, they stay. They try harder. They obsess. Why? Because on a deep level, part of them believes that if they can just make this person love them, they will finally feel worthy. Not just now, but retroactively. It's like winning a prize they never got as a child. The subconscious logic is simple. This time, if I do it right, the story ends differently. But it rarely does. Familiar pain is seductive. It doesn't feel good, but it feels known. And the human brain craves familiarity. The same way you might rewatch a movie you already know the ending to, some people revisit emotional dynamics they already understand, even if they end in heartbreak. This is why people often say things like, I always fall for the same type of person, or I don't know why I attract narcissists, or nice people feel boring to me. That's not by accident. That's emotional programming. When love has always been connected to instability, peace feels uncomfortable. When affection came with conditions, unconditional love feels suspicious. And when someone grows up surrounded by drama, silence can feel like abandonment, even when it's actually safety. This is the emotional blueprint we carry into adulthood. Unless we become aware of it, we will keep reenacting the same relationships, just with different faces. A woman whose mother was critical may fall in love with a partner who always puts her down. Not because she enjoys it, but because it mirrors what love always looked like. A man whose father was controlling may find himself with a partner who micromanages and punishes. Not because he wants to suffer, but because part of him believes that love always comes at a cost. These beliefs are often hidden beneath layers of self-protection. People don't walk around saying, I'm chasing my childhood pain. They say, but we have chemistry. No one else gets me like they do. They're just misunderstood. But chemistry is not always compatibility. Sometimes it's just trauma recognizing trauma. And here's another reason why people stay in familiar pain. They don't believe there's anything better. Not because better doesn't exist, but because better feels foreign, and the unknown, even when it's healthier, feels scary. You can offer someone peace, kindness, and respect, and they may still run back to the person who ignores their calls, yells during arguments, or gives affection only when it's convenient. Why? Because that version of love feels more real to them. Because chaos feels like home. This is especially true in communities and households where dysfunction was normalized. If jealousy, shouting, cheating, and manipulation were everyday occurrences, then emotionally available love might feel fake, like something from a movie, not to be trusted. Even pop culture reinforces this. We glamorize toxic passion in films and music. We confuse pain with depth. Ride or die becomes a badge of loyalty, even when it leads to emotional ruin. But love is not supposed to break you before it builds you. It's not supposed to feel like a test you can never pass. So how do we start to unlearn this? It begins with emotional awareness, identifying the exact moment when a relationship starts to feel familiar in a painful way. Ask yourself, who does this remind me of? What pattern am I repeating? Am I being loved or being tested? Next comes discomfort tolerance, the ability to sit with the awkwardness of healthy love, learning to breathe through peace, not run from it, accepting kindness without suspicion, receiving support without guilt, and finally self-reparenting, giving yourself the love, safety, and validation you never received, not waiting for a partner to complete you, but becoming whole on your own. Because when you finally meet someone who loves you without hurting you, the first thing you might feel is fear. That's okay. That's your nervous system recalibrating. Let it. In Chapter 6, we'll break down the real-life barriers that keep people trapped in toxic relationships, from financial control to shame, loneliness, and the fear of starting over. Because leaving pain isn't just emotional. It's logistical, psychological, and often terrifying. Chapter 6, Crisis and Conformity. Why people stay trapped in toxic love. It's easy to ask, why don't they just leave? But that question ignores the mountain of fear, shame, and real-life barriers that keep people locked in toxic relationships, even when they know they're suffering. Leaving isn't just a decision. It's a process. And for some, it feels more like jumping off a cliff than walking through a door. Let's start with one of the biggest barriers, financial dependence. In many toxic relationships, one partner controls the money. They might discourage the other from working, take over bank accounts, or make them account for every dollar spent. Over time, this creates a power imbalance. If you have no income, no savings, and no safety net, leaving can feel impossible. You're not just breaking up. You're facing homelessness, poverty, or custody battles. For single parents or immigrants without legal support, the fear is even greater. But even when money isn't a factor, emotional dependency is. Toxic partners don't just isolate their victims. They become their entire world. They subtly cut off friendships, question family ties, and poison your trust in outside voices. Soon, you feel like they're the only one who truly understands you, even as they hurt you. This isolation leads to the second major barrier: shame. People in toxic relationships often feel like they've failed. They think, everyone warned me. Now I look stupid. They feel embarrassed to admit the truth. And society doesn't help. We romanticize sticking it out. We praise couples for staying together, even when they're clearly destroying each other. For many, leaving feels like admitting defeat. And if children are involved, the pressure is even worse. Some stay for the kids, thinking it's better to keep the family together. But research shows children who grow up in high-conflict households often experience more long-term emotional damage than children of separated parents. Still, guilt is powerful. It convinces people to stay silent, to endure, to survive, but not to live. There's also the fear of being alone. Even if someone knows the relationship is toxic, the thought of sleeping alone, eating alone, or growing old without a partner can feel more painful than staying. This fear is rooted in human biology. We are wired for connection. And in a culture that often tells us our worth is tied to being chosen, leaving a relationship, even a harmful one, feels like losing identity. And for some, leaving means facing retaliation. Not all toxic relationships are abusive, but when they are, the threat of physical violence is real. Survivors report being stalked, harassed, threatened, or even harmed after leaving. Some partners promise suicide if left. Others promise revenge. The victim doesn't just fear what's inside the home. they fear what might happen once they escape it. And then there's the good times, the soft moments, the apologies, the inside jokes, the history. Even in a toxic relationship, there are memories that feel pure. People hold on to these fragments like lifeboats. They remember the first date, the first kiss, the I love yous, and they convince themselves that if they just wait a little longer, the person they fell for might come back. But they rarely do. What returns is often the cycle. Tension, explosion, apology, calm. Again and again. And sometimes the trap is in how others respond. When friends say, just leave already, or you're being dumb, it pushes victims deeper into shame. They stop reaching out. They stop telling the truth. They pretend things are fine. And the toxic partner uses that silence as proof. See? No one else will understand you. Only I will ever love you like this. So what does it take to leave? Sometimes it's a breaking point, a violent moment, a betrayal too deep, a quiet voice in the mirror saying, enough. But more often it takes a plan, a slow gathering of strength, a support system, a job application, a safe place to stay, a journal hidden under the bed. Leaving is not an overnight decision. It's 1,000 small steps that add up to one brave leap. And it's important to remember, you don't have to wait for things to get worse to walk away. You don't need proof of abuse to choose peace. You don't need anyone's permission to protect your spirit, because you were never meant to live inside pain. You were meant to grow, and toxic love will never be the soil for your healing. In Chapter 7, we reach the final turning point, how people truly begin to break free. We'll explore the transformation that happens when someone stops surviving for love and starts loving themselves enough to survive. Chapter 7, Breaking Free, Healing the Wounded Heart. There comes a moment when the pain of staying becomes louder than the fear of leaving. A moment when the excuses fade, the what-ifs fall away, and all that's left is truth, raw, painful, liberating. This isn't love, and I deserve more. That moment doesn't always look dramatic. Sometimes it's quiet. A tear falling on a steering wheel. A bag packed slowly in the dark. A phone number finally dialed for help. But in that stillness, a powerful shift begins. The beginning of healing. Healing after a toxic relationship is not about forgetting. It's about reclaiming. Reclaiming your voice, your boundaries, your peace, your identity. Because when you've been conditioned to believe that love equals suffering, the first step toward recovery is relearning what love really means. It starts with recognition. You begin to see the pattern for what it was. Not a passionate romance, but a trauma cycle. Not a soulmate, but a trigger. Not intensity, but instability. You stop romanticizing the good times. You stop blaming yourself for the bad ones. You stop searching for closure from someone who never gave you clarity. Then comes the hardest part, sitting with the wounds. All the parts of you that were told you weren't enough. All the guilt, the shame, the insecurity. You begin to realize that the relationship didn't just break your heart, it distorted your reflection. Healing means looking in the mirror and saying, I see you, and I'm not abandoning you again. Therapists call this process self-reparenting, giving yourself the love, validation, and protection you never received as a child or in the relationship. It might feel awkward at first, but slowly you begin to set boundaries. You stop over-explaining. You stop shrinking. You stop begging to be chosen. You learn to choose yourself. This journey is not linear. There are relapses. You might miss them. You might dream about them. You might even go back once or twice. That doesn't make you weak. That makes you human. But each time, the silence grows louder. The truth grows stronger. The mask slips faster. And one day, you no longer crave their approval. You crave your own peace. You rebuild your life, piece by piece. You find joy in small things. A quiet morning, a safe friend, your own laughter returning. You realize that love doesn't have to be loud to be real. It can be gentle, stable, kind. You learn that red flags aren't challenges to overcome. They're warnings to walk away. You learn that chemistry without consistency is just chaos in disguise. You learn that someone who truly loves you will never make you question your worth. And most importantly, you learn that your past doesn't define your future. Just because you were broken in one chapter doesn't mean you can't rise in the next. You are not too damaged. You are not too late. You are not too hard to love. You were just loving from a place of survival. Now you get to love from a place of strength. This final chapter is not a perfect ending. It's the beginning of something real. The slow, sacred return to yourself. To peace. To boundaries. to love that doesn't burn, but builds. So if you're still in it, still fighting to leave, still healing from the storm, hold on. Because the life you're building now will be quieter, safer, and more powerful than anything you've ever known. And when you finally look back, you won't see shame. You'll see strength. You'll see growth. You'll see a version of you that refused to stay small. You didn't just leave them. You came back to yourself.